The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
A massive bust announced this week, DOJ charging a total of 455 people, including doctors, across 45 states for their alleged role in $6.5 billion worth of fraud schemes.
The big story tonight is massive medical fraud. Independent journalist Nick Shirley is teaming up with Medicare Administrator Dr. Oz to continue his crusade against fraud. The pair hit the streets of New York City this week, and the video is quickly going viral. They targeted the city's senior daycare centers, which may have generated over $2 billion in just the last 3 years, while also looking into medical equipment companies across the city, as they say, are stealing millions from taxpayers.
The House Oversight Committee is accusing senior officials in Minnesota of failing to tackle fraud in the state's social services programs, despite allegedly being aware of it as early as 2019. Well, you are taking on so much, and all of this encompassing the massive fraud scandal that we're seeing, including the Feeding Our Future scandal.
There's always a little fraud in the healthcare system, but the massive weaponization started during COVID, because we taught people during COVID that we'd give money away from the federal government, and we didn't care if you stole it. And we reinforced that by never going after the bad guys.
The White House says its fraud task force has already rooted out more than $32 billion worth of fraud. Now, House Republicans are targeting a shocking case of potential waste in California. A recent report we brought you first right here on America Reports claims that state spent nearly $190 million on tablets for prison inmates, including death row killers and child predators, with some allegations that those inmates even use them to groom kids online.
Today, a new spotlight on fraud plaguing all sectors of America and the economy. The Small Business Administration suspending nearly 28,000 loan borrowers in Ohio. Those borrowers connected to the $1.1 billion in suspected pandemic-era fraud from the PPP program. Remember that? Along with COVID economic injury disaster loan activity. Now, the SBA has been going state by state to identify and take action against these potentially fraudulent borrowers.
Well, Maria, if you remember, under COVID, $1.2 trillion in PPP and EIDL loans went out. And yeah, it was estimated by the Biden-era Office of Inspector General that $200 billion was fraudulent.
Remember all the talking heads the other day, just a couple days ago, we played the clips on this show. They said, look, the elections are going to be perfect because there's laws. There are laws to ensure that everybody plays fair, that there's no cheating, there's no lawlessness, there's no stealing. Wouldn't that be nice? Look at all, and so much of it, as you heard there, just exploded onto the scene because of COVID. That's right. What were we saying all through that nightmare of a year? We were saying that the cure is worse than the disease. That certainly has been proven right. All of these trillions, just throw money at problems and the problems will go away. No, actually, they got worse. They got worse, and we're still exposing all this fraud. There's a Federalist piece. We're going to go through it here in the opening segment. America is becoming an empire of fraud and shameless crony grifting. Wow. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Thanks to Sam Livingston for subbing in yesterday. He thanked me ahead of time, saying, the only thing in the news is Dolly Parton. What is up with that, by the way? Dolly Parton, as if she's this saint. Conservatives, everybody, just heaping praise upon a celebrity. A celebrity who promoted a lot of fakery. Let's be honest. In some ways, it's perfect. It shows the level of celebrity worship that exists in our world, in our nation. just consumed, almost obsessed. There's nothing else to report on yesterday, I guess. Mr. Livingston did a pretty good job of covering some other topics. But how revealing is that? Meanwhile, fraud, fakery, stealing, theft, all of it. I mean, it's just done routinely. And so much of it made worse by COVID. Man-made. The vaccine, man-made. Everything we're making. It's not working, is it? Of course it isn't working. The title says it all. America's becoming an empire of fraud and shameless crony grifting. Is this a sign of a strong, stable, healthy, and prosperous society? Does this mean our nation's getting healthier? And are we getting closer to God, or are we farther away from Him than ever before? We just received this today. Supply of The Father's Love, my father's new book. A wonderful book, an incredible message. And you can see the image right at the top of the cover. A prodigal son returning to his father. The subtitle says here, an urgent message for his sons, both faithful and prodigal. There's lots of prodigal sons in our world today, even in the spiritual world of spiritual Israel. So many of God's saints, so many true Christians, they've fallen away from the truth. They're prodigal sons, and they need to return to God. That's the only way to fix the problem. To go and run back to the Father and His love. He'll show us. God is lawgiver. That's James 4 and verse 12. Let's stop talking about lawmakers that put in place all of these laws to make sure elections are fair and that there's no cheating. All these laws that prevent, or they're supposed to, fraud. How about if we go to the chief lawmaker? That would be God Himself. What a world. Mr. Armstrong wrote about this in Mystery of the Ages. What a world it would be if people would just keep the Ten Commandments. Think about how different this world would be if we kept one commandment. Just one. We are a nation of commandment breakers. That's what we are. That's who we are. That's the truth. You know, when we're going through Herbert Armstrong's autobiography, there's so many lessons and instances, events and job training and guidance from supervisors and other father figures. And you can see God just shaping the life of Herbert Armstrong even before his conversion 100 years ago, right now, basically, the fall of 1926. You can see God working in his life, his mind, his work, years before his conversion. Mr. Armstrong made a statement in 1980 saying that he was set apart from birth. And he had a lot to learn before he was converted to the truth. He had a lot of vanity, a lot of puffed up ego. He thought he knew the way. He was self-assured. He was cocky. He was arrogant at times, but he also was willing to learn. He also was ambitious. But, you know, when God was teaching him how to write, in this case, advertising, how to write ads, and these advisors, these supervisors saying, look, you want a large vocabulary, but they need to be simpler words that everyone understands, because when you put the advertisement out, what good is it if people don't follow your train of thought? What good is it if they can't understand the message? What good is it if you just go right over their heads? And all of these smart people during COVID, in the push to get a vaccine, throwing trillions at all these problems, because, you know, we're here to help. We're here to fix problems. And so little truth, so many lies, so much deceit, so much lawlessness, and so much of it is still being exposed. And what will be done about it? Nothing. That's the way it works. When you live in a post-truth world, it makes you appreciate the plain truth. That's what Herbert Armstrong named his magazine. And it's perfect. It was. Until prodigal sons started to bury all the truth and discontinue the works of Mr. Armstrong and eliminate the periodicals, the programs, the college. He spoke with plainness. He captured attention. And he based his theology, he based his writings, his messages on the truth of the Bible. This is what we've gotten so far removed from. And so where we are today, where America is today, is we're an empire of fraud and shameless crony grifting. So much of it just done right out in the open. And then here comes old Nick Shirley. It takes Nick Shirley, the independent journalist, to go and uncover so much of this crime, this corruption. Because, you know, the talking heads that are there to say, listen, the only problem is Trump and his people. Well, we have perfect elections except for Trump. Trump's trying to rig it. But look, when we do it, when we run it in California, here in that cold open, you have all this corruption being exposed in California. But we're supposed to believe that the elections in California are just perfect. Last year in Kentucky, this is from the Federalist piece, a Republican state senator read a list of school superintendent to a school superintendent. Hotel, ice cream, musical theater, tickets, hotel again, first class air travel, hotel, trip to Australia. Officials with school district credit cards racked up hundreds of thousands of dollars a month in often insane charges that had nothing to do with educating children. Apparently, the Galt House is quite a draw for public officials who have access to other people's monies. So they get all this government funding and, you know, they're in education. If government employees, you know, bureaucrats are perfect, they're not politically biased at all. That's what we've been told. You don't go after the deep state, Jim Comey and those guys. They're servants of the people. The problem is Trump, Orrin Chitler. Well, a close second to government employees, just pure as the driven snow, that would have to be people working in education because, well, they're just interested in the children, aren't they? They're just interested in teaching, you see. You know, we discussed this in class this morning. Herbert Armstrong was an educator. He was one of the greatest educators in human history, okay? And he didn't even go to college. He never graduated college, and yet he established three colleges. And as we heard this morning, you find this account in Stan the Raider's book. He was about ready to quit high school to become a high school teacher. Now, his dad stopped that little plan from going forward. But it just shows what Mr. Armstrong's mind was on. It was on teaching. It was on receiving truth or information. In the case of the years before conversion, he was really actively going out there devouring knowledge about the advertising profession. And he had guidance from his Uncle Frank. And a lot of other men, there are a lot of leading men actively involved in his life, teaching him basically how to be a teacher. He took all of that training and then used it when he produced those booklets on basic doctrines of the Bible. And he spoke with plainness and sincerity. He spoke with warmth. He spoke with authority. He spoke with conviction. That's the way he taught. And you just don't see that today. You see a lot of grifters, even in education, just there for the handouts, taking trips to Australia, whatever. Just put it on the card. Who pays for it? Well, the taxpayers, but come on. There's an unlimited supply of money. So just keep spending. And these are the receipts that got turned in. First class travel, trip to Australia, hotel bill, hotel again, musical theater tickets. Can you imagine? This is for real. This is for real. Listen to this clip from Kentucky somewhere, clip 7.
Fayette County schools have been making headlines, and this morning, Superintendent Dr. Demetris Liggins was at the state capitol facing tough questions about the district's budget.
As Allie Root reports, Dr. Liggins is taking responsibility for the $16 million shortfall and is determined to find out what went wrong.
A remorseful Superintendent Demetris Liggins stood before lawmakers Tuesday addressing major concerns about the school district's budget.
I was given 6 months of credit card statements from Fayette County Public Schools. The average expense of these credit card statements is $400,000 a month. There's 115 different credit cards, 50 of them issued to the central office employees. The amount of expenditures on there for travel alone is jaw-dropping. I counted August, $127,000 of travel in August. On the purchase orders for reimbursement for yourself, where it says at the top of this page, it's about kids, for your reimbursements alone for travel is $60,000. That's unbelievable. That's truly astonishing. That much travel needs to happen in any school district. I can't imagine. And as I look at those, the average airfare, it's about $1,000 to travel within the United States. That tells me that's probably first class. $7,000 for a trip to Australia. That's probably first class.
Can you believe this? Just some local school district in Kentucky traveling the world for education. Federalist says, responding to the list of his own credit card charges, the superintendent said that the Australia trip had been for, quote, himself and some other staff to examine best practices throughout the world to help students in emotional crisis. We're just doing it for the students. Yeah, my staff and I, we went to Australia for the kids. Doing it for the kids, you see. A lot of very useful staff training for local public agencies turns out to happen on other continents because of the educational value of the Australian emotional perspective. If you can't, I guess if you can't laugh, you just cry. This is where we are. He knows how the system works. Look, government is going to, they're going to dole out the trillions. There's money to burn. So who cares? Put it on the credit card, $400,000. Nobody's going to know the difference. And then it's exposed and you'll have a few whistleblowers and you'll have some tense hearings. Oh, yes. He'll squirm in his chair. He should be in jail. His staff should be in jail. But this is where we are. We're becoming an empire of fraud and shameless crony grifters. California Democrats are, if anything, somewhat less shy about taking care of themselves. Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara, who had no background in insurance when he was elected to that role, has a taste for foreign travel that makes Fayette County school officials look like mere amateurs. At least 32 trips to 23 countries and territories, spending over 163 days abroad on state time. I don't know if that's for the kids, but that's a lot of travel. For some California bureaucrat, really? Emotionally wounded, Laura told the Los Angeles Times that an accusation of improper travel expenses, it really diminishes me as an individual. Poor thing. A victim. He's been diminished. He's been exposed and diminished. No repentance. Zero repentance. We've arrived at the quite comfortable assumption that your government job is supposed to pay for your hotel, bar tab, and tickets to see Wicked, and no one is supposed to complain. Well, look, we expense that theater go. We just turn it in on the card or put it on the card. And then we wonder why we're trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars in debt. Whatever happened to Doge? Government efficiency. What a joke that turned out to be. It had the lifespan of a gnat, basically. It's there and then it's gone. It's all over. It's over for Doge. And so government waste, inefficiency, it just gets worse. Especially so following COVID. When they are throwing money at Minneapolis, and now Nick Shirley's discovering it in New York, New York City. There, it's in California. It's in Kentucky. It's at a local school district in Kentucky. Yeah, they're traveling to Australia for the kids. The kids. Listen to my father. This is from a Key of David that he gave in 2016, clip 9.
There is cause and effect. The Bible teaches that throughout. But this is a God's law of love that was set in motion, and then, of course, man rebelled and began going his own selfish way of vanity and lust and greed and jealousy and competition and strife. Mankind has caused all of his problems. Mankind causes them. Now, it all started in the Garden of Eden, but oh, it's continued for nearly 6,000 years. The gospel is a way of life that eliminates those problems. Eliminates them from our lives, individual lives and collective lives. It is an invisible law of love. A law of love, not a law of get. Not a law of lust and greed. It's a law of love. And it causes peace and joy and happiness.
Cause and effect. Causes God's way, God's love, it causes happiness and joy and unity. There's lots of prodigal sons in our world just running as fast as they can go away from God. And just like the prodigal son did, just wildly spending someone else's money. And we're not going to learn the lesson until we hit rock bottom, just like the prodigal son. You can see why God has to put us through what's coming to get our attention. Listen to one more from that same program, clip 10.
Mr. Armstrong talked about James 5, verses 1 through 11. Verse 3 shows that it is describing events in the last days. This is end time prophecy. Everything is corroded and corrupt. It talks about in verse 3. And then he talks about the rich men or the selfish people. See, they don't keep the invisible law. They have the people go out in the fields and harvest, whether it's spiritual or physical. And then they fraudulently take what they create or take advantage of their work and give them virtually nothing. And take it by fraud. I mean, that's just a way of life in this world. And God says it's about to stop forever.
God is the solution. One more from the Federalist that says, you look at the decline of American institutions and the widespread spiral into debt and financial instability and wonder how it's all happening. The people who are causing all of that institutional decline don't share your concern. They're at the hotel bar buying drinks with your money. They don't care. It's audacious. It's so brazen. It's in your face. Mind your own business. Yeah, taxpayers paid for this event, for first-class travel. the bar tab, whatever it is. They're unconcerned. The ones that receive all of that fun. What does God think about shameless crony grifting? What does God think about that kind of lifestyle? Isaiah 1 and verse 23. This is the passage where God says, look, come and reason with me. Let's reason together. Let me teach you. You've been a prodigal son for way too long. How about returning to God? How about turning from your wicked ways? He says in this same passage, verse 23, thy princes are rebellious and companions of thieves. Everyone loves gifts and follows after rewards. They judge not the fatherless, neither does the cause of the widow come unto them. They're not concerned about other people. They're not concerned about other people's money. They just go after gifts and rewards. They line their pockets. They're not actually out there solving problems. How many problems did the trillions of dollars solve following COVID? The cure is worse than the disease. Look at what it's done. I was talking to Brad McDonald yesterday about just the rising cost to take the troop over to Israel in November, just because of the weakening dollar. Last summer, it was like 3.5 shekel to $1, and now it's sitting at about 3.1. The dollar's getting weaker. And the world sees it. The world sees how the United States is just throwing money to the wind and then printing off more money and then trying to sell treasury bonds and then having to raise the rates so that investors will even buy the treasury bonds. And we've covered some of these things on this show, the things that the United States has to do now. They're forced to do this, this, and this because the borrower is a servant to the lender. We learn this in the Holy Bible. It's a curse. Charging the credit cards without any intention. And you see it at the very top with the management of the federal debt. That guy that was in the hearing in Kentucky, that's Uncle Sam. He might as well be. Yeah, just put it on the credit card. No one's ever going to know, and it's an unlimited supply. There's no limit. Even with credit cards, there's usually a limit, but not with Uncle Sam spending. No. If you're spending $400 billion more every year than you should be, well, just wait for the next crisis. Collapse in 2008. All right, let's spend $1 trillion more than what we have. COVID, let's spend $2 trillion more than what we have. Why not? It never stops. It never ends. It's never dialed back, is it? You've got people saying in a few years it's going to be $50 trillion. You can't even wrap your mind around these incomprehensible figures. No limit on spending. That's the mentality. Micah 3, verse 11. The heads thereof judge for reward, and the priests thereof teach for hire, and the prophets thereof divine for money. Yet will they lean upon the eternal and say, is not the Lord among us? None evil can come upon us. We're the best and greatest and most powerful nation in the world. There's no evil that's coming upon us. Can't happen. We're too righteous. Listen, we have laws on the books to ensure that the elections are fair. Amos 5 and verse 12, for I know your manifold transgressions and your mighty sins. They afflict the just, they take a bribe, and they turn aside the poor in the gate from their right. It's oppressive to ordinary people, citizens. That's the kind of leadership that we have, that the Bible says we would have in these last days. Isaiah 3, read the whole chapter. It's not going to end well for the United States. The debt in the end is going to crush our nation. There's going to be trade wars. There's going to be civil war. There's going to be world war. And this is what God has to do to get our attention. Why won't we heed? You know, in a week and a half, 2 weeks, coming up to the 25-year anniversary of 9/11. But what a wake-up call 9/11 should have been. You have people 25 years on talking about, oh yeah, the government went in there and they really increased their ability to spy, even on American citizens. Well, we've got to. We were forced to. So all these surveillance powers, the creation of Homeland Security, the things they added at airports for security, supposedly. But what about winning the war against terrorism? I'll call it that. That's what they labeled it. It was labeled incorrectly from the start, but, you know, we'll just play along. Did we win? Did we actually defeat the enemy that brought on that mass tragedy? Have we learned the lessons? Did we turn to God? Or just assemble on the Capitol and sing America the Beautiful, and then that was it. Then back to fighting, back to spending, back to throwing money at problems. Listen to this from NBC News on 9/11. Speaking of 9/11, here's clip one.
Breaking news tonight, a trial date has officially been set for the alleged mastermind of the 9/11 terror attacks. This news comes just 2 weeks before the 25th anniversary of the day that changed America. When will we see Khalid Sheikh Mohammed stand trial?
It will still be a period of time to go, and it has been a long, slow journey toward justice. A military judge issued a new order tonight that sets the trial date for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, also known as KSM, for June 2028. That's about 18 months further into the future than prosecutors had hoped for, but the military judge set it to give additional time for the process to unfold. Now, he is accused of being the top conspirator. Some call him the chief architect for the 9/11 attacks. He was a part of Al-Qaeda. He was a deputy to Osama bin Laden. He has been held at Guantanamo Bay for 20 years, and he was captured in Pakistan in 2003. So he and other alleged co-conspirators, three others, will face this military commission that is separate from the federal criminal court system. This is about military justice. There had been plea negotiations where KSM had agreed to plead guilty in order to have a life sentence, not risking the death penalty. That was revoked a few years ago. Part of the delays, COVID added to the delays as well. But as you noted, Tom, the anniversary, a poignant one, 25 years, is in just 2 weeks, and it may stun many of our viewers that it has taken this long. And of course, I don't have to remind any of our viewers the cost of 9/11. Nearly 3,000 Americans died on that day.
The trial is scheduled for 2028. The mastermind of 9/11 on 2001. 27 years on, he's still in Guantanamo. He's still in American custody and yet to stand trial. Have we learned? The U.S. government can sure collect a lot of data about American citizens. We've definitely done a lot more of that since 9/11. What else have we learned? What other lessons? What other takeaways? We've got an Islamist mayor of New York City. We've got Islam infiltrating the Girl Scouts, of all things. What, we haven't even put the ones in prison that actually carried out the dastardly act 25 years ago. And the lawyers and the government, I'm sure the government must have its hands in the mix as well. Just trying to get justice, you know, just trying to carry out justice. What a system. I wonder how much of all of that. I think he's going to be on trial for and possibly go to death row at 28 years on. How much of America's taxpayer money has gone toward keeping alive and well-fed Khalid Sheikh Mohammed? 25 years. Pretty amazing. Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 11 says, because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. There's no sentence. There's no punishment. Look at what happened just a few years ago when America pulled out of Afghanistan. Shameful, a shameful display. All of it caught on television. The whole world saw it. 9/11 happened, and then what? Well, how did the U.S. respond? How did we come out? Victorious, or did we suffer a shameful defeat? Even the perpetrators haven't been put to trial yet. It's crazy. CBC, this is the Canadian broadcast center or network. The National Post reports, with the 25th anniversary of 9/11 on the horizon, the CBC has circulated a memo to reporters and editors across all its news platforms, reminding them not to refer to the attacks that claimed 3,000 lives and changed the modern world as terrorist attacks. Do not call it a terrorist attack. This is your media in Canada. Some of those terrorists worked their way into the States through Canada. And here's I guess, Canada's version of CNN. Don't use terrorism in this. The missive from the broadcaster's Journalistic Standards and Practices Office, a copy of which was obtained by the National Post, includes a section on the long-standing language guidance. You see, as I say, it makes you appreciate the language guidance that Herbert Armstrong received, studying Albert Hubbard and getting direction from his supervisors, his managers, his uncle, his father. And then he established the plain truth. Watched, read, followed by millions and millions of people. Back when more people obviously appreciated the truth, plainly spoken. Here's CBC giving some language direction, some guidance. Don't say terrorist attack. It's more important to not offend Islam than it is to tell the truth. Do not refer to September 11 attacks as terrorist attacks, it reads about halfway through, with the first part bolded and the last two words linking back to the CBC's internal language guide. The hijackings led to passenger jet crashes in Washington, D.C., Pennsylvania, and Manhattan. The letter was first reported by the Toronto Sun. Well, listen, it was just a passenger jet that exploded. It just so happened that there were four of them, and it happened almost all at once. And they were piloted by radical Islamists. Three, four of them in each plane. They murdered the pilots, took over the planes, and steered the planes to murder thousands of Americans. But don't you call that a terrorist attack. That's the language guidance from the CBC in Canada. Now, the language guidance for January 6th, definitely terrorism. Oh, yes. Definitely terrorism. These people aren't even serious about broadcasting the plain truth. They're not. They're liars. They're propagandists. They're radical political activists, just dressed in nice clothing. They're not there to speak the truth. And when you're in a post-truth world, well, it makes you really appreciate the truth. The most important books that there are, the Holy Bible, number one, Mystery of the Ages, the autobiography of Herbert W. Armstrong, The Father's Love, this is a great one right here. So much truth. So many blessings in a world that just has lost its way. The prodigal son. Victor Davis Hanson, he's got a story. Were the bombs of August 1945 demonic? That's what Tucker Carlson said about them recently. And then also, Victor Davis Hanson is addressing the yearly debate over whether or not the U.S. should have dropped those bombs. Because more and more, we're so far removed from history, our own history, and there's so much self-hate promoted in our schools, our universities, you know, education, where we just want what's best for the kids. Every August, he says, debate renews over both the wisdom and the morality of dropping the two American atomic bombs 81 years ago on the Japanese cities of Hiroshima. August 6th, Nagasaki, August 9th. This August has been no exception. So VDH comes along and he's out there, he's doing his best, trying to tell the truth. But more and more, he's, you know, he's standing relatively alone as history fails. The end of history, the end of reading, the end of study. Listen to what Tucker had to say about nuclear weapons, clip 8.
And let me just indulge my theory, which I can't control myself from talking about.
Run, baby.
You've heard it before, but I think nuclear weapons, which I don't think were created by people, sorry. I don't care how many movies they make about it. I don't believe that.
You didn't see Oppenheimer?
Yeah, okay. I wouldn't watch that crap. I wouldn't let that into my head for 1 second. But anyway, because it's all lies. But anyway, sorry, now I'm getting really crazy, but it's all true. What I'm saying is true. I think once man possessed the power or believed he possessed the power to destroy everything that's alive, I think that he rejected God. Like, that is kind of like, that's rejection of God. And like, everything changed after that. People became convinced they were gods. And that's when the true craziness started. It's not the 60s, or the, you know, Obama years or whatever you want era. It's like post-nuclear weapons. That's what I believe.
So again, he's gotten some criticism for this, saying that nuclear weapons weren't created by people. I guess he's saying that they were created by demons or Satan. And there is a real spirit world. There certainly is. And you can say how confused he is, okay, but you can also see that he sees this world is pretty bad. But those weapons were made by man. That's exactly the problem. We're under the influence of Satan the devil. We're making weapons, and look, there's enough to destroy human civilization many times over. How could anyone dismiss what Jesus said in the Olivet Prophecy about great tribulation and the ability that man now has to completely extinguish himself? Man made those weapons. Man continues to make those weapons. In fact, man is picking up the pace when it comes to weapons-making ability. This is what we do. This is what we spend our money on. And you listen to world leaders today, and they will tell you, we have to. There's nothing holding us back now. We have to do this. There's no restraint. It's Putin. Putin's to the east. And look at Orange Hitler. Look at the instability in the world. We've got to be able to defend ourselves. The rush toward world war, accelerating toward world war. Victor Davis Hanson says, as ever, many critics have faulted the United States for the bombings, two gruesome blasts aimed at dual-use military and industrial targets in both cities that may have caused some 100 to 120,000 immediate deaths. 2 years ago, podcaster Tucker Carlson blasted the Truman administration's decision, alleging that the atomic bomb was not the result of decades of sophisticated nuclear physics research. Instead, Carlson claimed the atomic bombs were demonic, tools of innate evil, and thus apparently created through the supernatural intervention of dark powers. So we've got another wrinkle to the debate now. It's not just about whether or not they should have been dropped, but who made them? Was man even involved? Many claimed the bombs were unnecessary. They argued that the previous devastation of Japan by the U.S. Army Air Forces and the U.S. Navy had made a quick surrender inevitable. Some declared that racism had prompted their use against the Japanese alone. There's plenty of historical revisionists that are there to craft the narrative just the way you want it to be. Just rewrite it. Rewrite the history. And then people won't think anything of it. It'll just get a few more clicks. The more off the wall, the more provocative it sounds, the more attention it gets. Here comes the CBC. Now, don't call 9/11 terrorist attacks. Don't call it that. Call it something different. Call it an explosion. Call it a plane crash. Says, despite these even more ruthless alternative proposals, the real reason the U.S. bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki was the Truman administration's sincere belief that the new weapon was the only way to shock the Japanese into ending the war as quickly as possible and thereby prevent, as it had announced at the time, the likely horrific invasion of Japan that otherwise would have been needed. Indeed, it's likely that the two bombs saved tens of thousands of Allied and millions of Japanese lives by averting a two-pronged, two-year invasion of the Japanese homeland. This is from a true historian, and he says at the end, we may consider nuclear weapons, along with other weapons that are just as deadly, to be satanic, but they certainly were not first created by the devil. Rather, on balance, good people sometimes invented bad weapons to stop far worse people from killing innocents. This is the world we live in. It's an evil world. The present evil world, Galatians 1 and verse 4. What happens when, in that world, America loses the pride in its power? Or America starts to revise its own history? Or America has a broken will? Or America is so steeped in sin that it's created this empire of fraud and cronies and grifters that are only interested in serving themselves? Will that America have the will to do what America did in the 1940s? To destroy fascism? To destroy the will of the Japanese people, or the leadership in particular? It's a different world. We're coming into the post-America age as well. We haven't even learned the lessons from 9/11. That was just 25 years ago. At the Spectator, just when you thought Girl Scouts couldn't get worse, the Muslims take over. What? Yeah. It's quite a headline. The organization remains relevant enough that Muslims in the United States are turning Girl Scouts into a vehicle for evangelization. So the Girl Scouts are now seen as a propaganda tool to be exploited by Islam. It says here earlier this week, White House correspondent Natalie Winters reported that Girl Scouts can now get little badges for learning about Islam, touring mosques, memorizing sayings and prayers written in the Quran, and experimenting with fasting during Ramadan. Muslim Girl Scouts can get badges for sharing Ramadan with a friend by inviting non-Muslims to participate in the feasting after dark, or by taking them to a mosque and having them join in Salah, the obligatory prayer Muslims participate in 5 times a day. Certainly don't bring up Herbert W. Armstrong to any of these organizations. He is to be attacked. His message is to be suppressed. His work is to be blotted out. But this and any other lifestyle, way of living, look at Dolly Parton. I haven't seen one criticism. I guess she was a religious saint. She's like a queen. She's royalty. She's of this world. She's a pretty good representative of this world, this present world. I'll agree with that. But what a world it is. Look at what we're becoming. Look at how far removed we are from God. Teaching girls about the Islamic faith while they participate in Girl Scout strikes one as an incredibly paradoxical and ludicrous. It's true that feminism has done plenty to ruin society, but it's also true that feminism and Islam ought to have very little in common. But no, they're bedfellows now. Feminism has done plenty to ruin society. I've got a whole nother stack here on the WNBA. Another article by Victor Davis Hanson on the WNBA and just how violent it is, how racist it is, how woke it is. It's not there to help women. It's just like educators not being there to help children. It's every man for himself. It's every man doing what seems right in his own eyes. Just mind your own business. Who cares if we're flying to Australia on the taxpayer's dime? We got to do it. We got to do it for training. We got to do it to be educated or to become better educators. The best educator of the past century was Herbert W. Armstrong. And read any of his works. Study it. Get the truth, the plain truth, like you've never heard it before. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.